6.5%, was it? Is that what the current odds are of the Stanley Cup?
Well, and if you look at the round-by-round progression, the Stanley Cup favorite is the Vancouver Canucks.
Like, what a time to be alive!
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust, this is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Here they are, the best starting lineup we could afford under the salary cap. Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by Anna and Chris. I am Chris. She is Anna. We are here recording on a Saturday night before the Vancouver Canucks take on the Winnipeg Jets. We said this last week, right at the end, like quite literally at the end. We're not going to be able to talk about the game of Quesnel-Ham Hint, so you're going to learn about it as you watch it, and then you're going to listen to this episode tomorrow or some other day. You're going to be like, why did you not talk about the Jets game? It's going to come out a day early. So it's going to totally throw your schedule off. For that, I apologize. I would like to say I'm going to blame Anna, but it's actually also my fault. I think we're equally to blame here. I've got, like, you know, activity registrations for Baby Force, particularly swimming. Yep. Sunday night, I got to get that done.
And I got to watch the Oscars. So I think that really shows the differences between our lives outside the podcast.
Yeah, I mean, in fairness, the Oscars might be on here, but I would not have probably rearranged things to watch it myself. But for my daughter, I
got
to get her into swimming.
Yeah, got to make sure she doesn't drown someday.
That's right. And that's a very important thing. Exactly. And, you know, I also, if I don't, you know, get into the virtual queue to get into swimming lessons right away, I run out of time. And when you run out of time and the deadline comes and goes, you make do with what you got, which means, you know, I guess learn how to swim in a bathtub.
Right.
Yeah. Speaking of running out of time, apparently the Vancouver Canucks, they ran out of time. In fairness, despite having time or not, they were somewhat restricted as to how much action they could possibly get in on. We'll talk about that, obviously, in this episode. Anna, I think our optimism that was misplaced 2 weeks ago was simply earlier than necessary.
Yeah. This was the optimistic Canucks, like, this was the positive Canucks. This was, like, yeah, Canucks ran the road trip, so mm-hmm. We were just a week early on our predictions.
Yeah, no kidding. Oh, well, I mean, it happens. You know, some podcasts know what they're talking about, and you and I, not so much.
Yeah, that's us.
So, actually, on that note, I happen to just see a post in Reddit about, like, oh, favorite Canucks podcast. Like, it came up as, like, oh, you might be interested in this. And I was like, you know, it's been a while since I've searched to see if C4 ever gets mentioned in these types of lists. It's very rare.
Now there's thousands of Canucks podcasts out there. It happens.
Yeah, exactly. And there was actually many comments where people are like, there are just so many podcasts. There aren't any good ones. And I'm like, well, wow. I mean, C4 has never been good. So even when there wasn't that many, we were there. 9 months ago, someone had replied to a post about favorite Canucks podcasts. C4 made the list.
Nice.
And they actually said, Chris and Anna are very level-headed, even-keeled. They tell it how it is. It may not be everyone's cup of tea, but they're not shouting at the mic like others. And I thought, high praise.
There you go. See, we're not positive or negative. We're even-keeled.
Well, I mean, it must have been a positive show or an off-season show or something like that. Because when people accuse us of being a pessimistic podcast, it's hard to argue with that.
Over the years, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, we were far more balanced when we had the, you know, always optimistic Clay. Mm-hmm. And then you had, like, Matt, who was the pessimist. And I sort of, you know, went to either side of the fence as to which way the wind blew. When Clay left, the optimism went straight out the window. That's not to suggest there hasn't been some, but, you know, Matt was still very much pessimistic. You and I think it's fair. We're a lot more even-keeled, though.
I am a cynic by nature, but, like, it was hard not to be.
I've never heard of a Brit being cynical.
Yeah, exactly. It was hard not to be over the Benning years, but you know, what we try and like, yeah, we try and say things how they are. So when they are good, we're trying to say, hey, things are good.
And when things are not good, we're also equally saying things aren't good. But things are kind of both good and not good, depending on what it is that we're going to talk about in this episode. And you'll probably tell, rewind, good, half full, half empty, not so much.
Empty.
And thoughts will be shared. Might as well just start sharing those thoughts and rewind. Before we get into, you know, the trade deadline, because that just happened. It was like yesterday. Mm-hmm. We're recording this on a Saturday night. Let's talk about the week that was. So when we last recorded an episode, the Vancouver Canucks had squeaked out a 2-1 win against the Ducks. I actually rewatched it, because I hadn't watched it before we had recorded, just bits and pieces. And yeah, man, it was the opposite of high event hockey.
Yeah, it was not exciting.
But a 2-1 win is a 2-1 win.
Yeah.
We then see the Vancouver Canucks play the LA Kings again. And I like how you put it in the rundown. The Canucks do revenge.
They do revenge.
In quotes. They do revenge. Much more inspiring game of hockey down there in Los Angeles than the previous game that we got to bear witness to here in Vancouver, eh?
Inspiring in the fact that the Canucks weren't completely downed in the second and third period. But I would still say LA did their, you know, damnedest to provide, like, the most boring hockey possible.
Well, okay, true. And, you know, getting that early goal, I think, had a lot to do with it, because they sort of figured the Vancouver Canucks are a team to really frustrate and shut down. But to Vancouver's credit, Vancouver started to take advantage of the LA Kings, you know, I don't want to say coasting. They weren't coasting, but to use the soccer vernacular, park the bus. Mm-hmm. And the Vancouver Canucks were doing quite well getting around, or attempting to get around said bus, and doing so with that PD goal in the second, and then in overtime. But the Canucks, in my opinion, looked like the team that wanted to win.
Yeah.
The Kings looked like the team that didn't want to lose.
Yes, which is how the Kings usually look. Let's be honest, the Kings of late, like, it's so funny, isn't it? Because maybe even last year we were saying, what young, exciting players the Kings have. And there is still some young excitement in there. Like, Quinton Byfield is fun to watch still. But, like, yeah, the style of play right now is pretty skating through quicksand. But mm-hmm. it is disciplined. So, like, Canucks did well to sort of unlock that, you know? You still have to, like, LA are just going to make no mistakes. Like, you just have to wait for them to make that one mistake and then you take advantage, but Canucks did.
Yeah, and, you know, it never occurred to me until really that game that the Canucks and Kings, who happened to be in the same division, had to wait until, quite frankly, the end of the season to play each other for the very first time.
Yeah, it is weird. Like, it's honestly, like, when you come from a football background, where it's literally like you play everyone in the first half of the season.
And then yeah, home and home.
Everyone.
Home and away, whatever you want to refer to it.
In the second half of the season? Like, yeah. It's so weird to me that it's just like, okay, well, you're just going to wait until you play LA, and then you're going to play them 10 times in, like, three weeks.
And, you know, that could 10 times could, you know, very well play out. I mean, there's still a whole lot of hockey left between now and the end of the season. But if the Vancouver Canucks were to finish where they happen to be, there is a slim chance mm-hmm. that the, you know, Kings could be their, you know, first round opponent. Now, I mean, there's a lot that still would have to occur. Like right now, the Kings have themselves the third spot in the West, so they're above the wild card, but not significantly. And it doesn't take a whole lot of, you know, bad games comparative to the good games from those chasing you to find yourself where the Golden Knights might be. Oh, hey, Anna, did you know that Vancouver took on the Vegas Golden Knights only 2 days after the Kings win?
I think I heard that.
Yeah, and, you know, if you were to consider that the Vancouver Canucks went into a Golden Knights rink to a team whose really fumbled it, like from where they were at the start of the season, mm-hmm. chasing. I mean, actually, the Kings and the Golden Knights were the two teams that Vancouver was, you know, fighting for first overall in the West with. And now you have two teams fighting to hold on to the playoffs, the Golden Knights being, I think, the bigger surprise of the two. But this game was not a team that didn't want to lose. It was two teams that wanted to win. And while the Vancouver Canucks kept things in control-ish, there were many moments where the Golden Knights had just decided, you know what? Who cares about defense? Let's open this sucker up and make it an entertaining game for the fans in the rink. Because, boy, was it wide open hockey in that third period.
Yeah, and I only saw the third period as live. I was at a work event being fancy. But it was just like, I don't know, not saying it was a shock to see the way the Canucks and Knights played out that third period, but like it did feel interesting for the sort of nemesis that has mm-hmm. been the Knights Canucks like relationship over the years, that Canucks just felt completely in control of that.
They did, but they did play the fast and loose game, or maybe not as loose, but definitely as fast as what Vegas was bringing. Like that third period was not indicative of the entire game. I think it was an exciting game. The Vancouver Canucks get out to a goal lead in the first period. Vegas settles down to try to cut that lead in half early in the second. You have Connor Garland, who was pretty darn stoked when he scored that goal to restore that two-goal lead.
Yeah. Like,
I actually was kind of surprised by his, like, you know, not over-the-top celebration, but definitely... Yeah.
Because he is
feeling
like,
the mojo celebration.
Yeah, like more boring hockey answers. Like, you know, what are we calling your line? It doesn't matter. Like, we're just playing hockey, blah, mm-hmm. blah, until we die. But yeah, I do think he's...
You know, down on the skates, fist pump, yeah. shouting into the... You know,
I mean, in fairness to him, he has no choice but to be down on his skates. Yeah. That is just a size Anna. Thing.
So cruel.
I'm such a short person, but I love making Connor Garland size jokes. I don't know why. He does honestly seem like, when you get glimpses into him, like he seems like a really great teammate and like supportive, positive person. But yeah, he is contained by the hockey man. Must be mm-hmm. sensible thing. So I think maybe that was the real Connor just getting out a bit. It's nice.
Well, regardless, the Vancouver Canucks held on, get that 3-1 win. And, you know, when we were sort of talking about things on our last episode, you and I had agreed that either LA or Vegas was going to be a trap game. And apparently you and I don't know what we're talking about, Anna.
Yeah. There you go. Like, and just on that sort of boring hockey type thing, there were a couple of, like, you know, sneaky things that made it seem like this was a big deal to the Canucks. Like, I saw some fun, like, Instagram posts about the road trip, and it just seems like to me that there is a really great feeling in the team there, because mm-hmm. they went through that bit of adversity where they were in a sort of regression state, and now it's like they feel like they're playing good hockey again, and they're actually winning doing it.
And, you know, even with the regression, the Vancouver Canucks had established themselves so well in the NHL that, I mean, they still have a 10-point lead on the Oilers in the Pacific, only a couple of points on the Stars for the West. But the fact remains they're top of the conference and, you know, still, you know, in the conversation for the league overall. I mean, it's Florida and Boston. Really setting the pace out in the East again. But that's not like the Vancouver Canucks have fallen so far behind that they're not in the conversation with the President's Trophy. They've got, what, a 3-point difference, I want to say. I don't know what the games in hand are or if there are any. But
yeah,
it just goes to serve how well the Canucks have done. Like at the top of the Hockey Night Canada broadcast, Ron McLean had called attention that the Vancouver Canucks have led the division for 90 days.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's just like, like, I think we discussed this either last week or the week before, but the regression really, it bugged me because the way Canucks were playing was uninspiring. But from a point of view, was I worried? Like, I don't think I ever was, because Canucks had built up that cushion. And you know what? We don't want the President's Trophy anyway. Like, President's Trophy is cursed, so let's... At least from our perspective, so we don't want that.
Yeah, and you know, their fancy stats did show signs of weakness, and it is likely that that's what we had started to see catch up to the team. But you're right. I think the concerning part that we both shared was that there was sort of uninspired hockey. The team was making mistakes. These are areas they should be able to address internally. And the results may not change. They could still lose games. But when they lose games that they're in competing for, you know, an entire, you know, three periods, when they're not making these, you know, mental mistakes that just get absolutely punished in the playoffs. Those are the things that they can sort out. And you're right. President's Trophy, who cares? We've done that before.
Yeah,
don't need it again.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. The team is taking on the Winnipeg Jets shortly after we record this episode. The Jets are still just as hot as they were prior to their last visit here to Vancouver. If we consider where they are in their own division, they're actually not only holding games in hand on both the Stars, but then, you know, if we think in the West, the Canucks, they're only a handful of points back. I have to think that this is still a game that you and I would probably suggest is not a trap game.
It's a tough
one. But a tough one for Vancouver to have coming back from the successful road trip.
Yeah, I would say it's not a trap game because a trap game would suggest it's not legit tough. It's just the Canucks getting in their own way. But this is
is legit tough.
Legit tough game. And Connor Hellebuck, I think it was suggested during practice yesterday from the Jets that he'll be back in net. So it's... So it's going to be a tough game. Like, Demko has been maybe not back to his best, but certainly showing really good signs again. So this could be a really strong battle of the goalies here. I guess the only good thing, and we'll talk about this a bit more in the trade deadline, but the Canucks friend arch enemy Tyler Toffoli won't be in the lineup. He's gone
I was going to say he didn't actually have tickets to come to Vancouver regardless of what transpired.
Yeah, exactly. He was just like, no thanks to Vancouver. I'm not going there again, even for a one game.
No. I want to recall what we said last week, and I can't for the life of me, but I think we had agreed that of the three games, there were 3 points to be had. The Vancouver Canucks currently have 4 out of 2 of the 3. And I'm going to suggest that we both had the Winnipeg game as a loss, did we not?
Yes, I'm pretty sure we did. And I think we both weirdly picked Vegas as a win. So, like, ahead of our time on that. Like, good for us.
Yeah, but, you know, they got us 2 points instead of 1 against the Kings. Are you still thinking that this is a loss, or has, you know, the play of late inspired you to become the optimist again?
It's hard to say, right? Because, like, literally it's so much optimism coming off that road trip. Do the players look at the trade deadline and think, well, you know, like, we didn't do anything? Or maybe they think, yeah, we didn't do anything. We don't need to. We've got a good group of guys here. We've got... And maybe that's, like, I do think that mentality is really in a good place right now. So maybe they are just, like, feeling good. I feel like it's just like one more day that I would have liked for that mentality to be at its peak, but it's gonna be a really hard game. I do feel better though, like, so let me put my positive hat on. Let's change that L to a dub.
Okay. Well, I...
Are you sticking with your negative mindset, Chris?
I know. I want to come around to this. I really do. I feel horrible, but I think it's still an L for me. And it's not that I don't think the Vancouver Canucks aren't going to play a competitive game of hockey. I just think it's a tough game to be coming home to.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It is.
But I will concede that what you've described as to the potential of how the room and the team could very gel around the fact that, yeah, management has placed, you know, faith in this group to get things done. Let's, you know, show them, you know, a means to think. Like, I don't know. So if the Canucks win, that's great. That's what we both want. Mm-hmm. But I think I'm going to stick with the L here. Okay. I know, horrible, horrible fan, yeah. Pessimist. I'm no longer even keeled. The horrible reviews on Reddit are coming in as I produce. Looking ahead, though, the Vancouver Canucks do get a couple of nights off, well, three, before they take on the Avalanche at home on Wednesday. And then they get a couple more nights before taking on the Capitals at home. I mean, looking at the schedule here, they've got four games over the course of approximately 10 days.
Yeah.
So a nice, easygoing schedule they only have, one real road trip left.
Yeah.
I mean, they have a couple of road games after it, but, you know, not significant. But looking at the Avs, looking at the Caps, what do you think is happening there?
I still think the Avalanche are going to walk. I think Avalanche, still very strong team. Wednesday night game. Obviously, it depends a lot of what happens tonight, but I'm going to give Avalanche the win there and then say that the Canucks beat the Capitals on Saturday.
Okay. See, I kind of feel that the Vancouver Canucks are going to get dubs out of both the Avs and the Caps. Now, the Avs is going to be a great game. The Capitals, though, that is, for lack of a better way to describe it, a potential trap game of a team mm-hmm. coming from the East into hometown. Caps are, I think, without acknowledging it, realizing that the playoff picture is not one as to which they'll be included in. And, you know, might be a team that's composed of people trying to perform for that next contract or to be kept around in the following season. So,
yeah. It is interesting, that.
Kind of a weird vibe to it.
It is a weird vibe because it's just like we had the Islanders supposedly keeping their playoff hopes alive with Bo Horvat winning the game for him. Of course. Good for you, Bo. And then they did nothing at the trade deadline. It's just like, is Lou saying he's donezo? When he's like on the edge? It just seems very strange to me when you are like basically a bubble team with like the Metropolitan is pretty open like for that mm-hmm. third spot, you would think. Yeah. Anyway, so it's just, I'm just curious because it's just like you have those kind of mushy middle teams. It's now in the Metropolitan, the Isles, the Capitals, the Devils, and then Penguins and Blue Jackets are like, they are literally donezo, but yeah. It's an odd thing going on over there. It feels like more of a Western Conference problem, but.
Well, and we'll talk more about it as we get into half full, half empty. But if it wasn't clear to anyone prior to the deadline, I don't know how many times I heard it from both the networks. Apparently, there is an arms race going on in the West. And very few acknowledgments were ever made of teams in the East doing anything.
Yeah.
Like, that's not to suggest that they weren't. There was some activity. But the focus was, arms race in the West. Look at the arms race in the West, so.
Yeah, West is best. Like, the West will rise again, right?
As it is, it seems. Well, we'll take a break. You're listening to the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by Anna and Chris.
Take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on that.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? And that because he was mad.
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy.
Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty. He's going to get a lot of power play time. And, yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
Going into the deadline, when we chatted about it, Anna, you thought that the Vancouver Canucks might have a means to make something happen. I had serious doubt. Not to suggest that I knew or had expected anything. I simply look at the Vancouver Canucks roster as it was currently constructed, who they had available, the draft picks that they could potentially provide someone else, and as well the cap spaces to which they had to work with. And it became very clear going into the deadline that Guentzel wasn't going to be coming to Vancouver, that the price that was being asked by Pittsburgh was too significant. And that's fine. Again, sometimes the best deal is the deal you walk away from. The Toffoli deal was one you're like, oh, are they sure they couldn't have made that one work?
Yeah, once again, Tyler Toffoli comes at a reasonable price. Yeah, it is strange, right? Because it's all in the beauty is in the eye of the beholder, I guess. But some of these trade deals, you just think, well, there was noise that the Canucks were in on that, like significant like sources. They were like interested in Guentzel before it got too rich for them. Definitely interested in Tyler Toffoli. And you're just thinking, like, Canucks were there, like, really? They didn't have that much to offer? Or like, what was it about the proposal that, yeah, wasn't appealing to the Devils?
Yeah, I mean, you know, for those who weren't aware, like, the Jets gave up a third and a second. And the second isn't this year, it's next year. Like, it's not an expensive trade for the purposes of what they're looking to use Toffoli for. And not only that, only half of Toffoli's contract came for the ride. Like,
yes,
so there's cap flexibility built into it. Not again, that's still a $2 million problem that the Vancouver Canucks would have to figure out how to fit in $100,000+ of room that they had for deadline day. But that's why you pay the lawyers and the capologists to figure that out for you.
And maybe the Canucks like would send something out of the way. Clearly, like, New Jersey wants draft picks. Like, that would have to be form the bulk of their proposal, but they couldn't find like an Abbotsford player, like, yeah, and a couple of draft picks.
And I'm not going to say a weird deal. It's just a deal. It was interesting that the deal could not be done. And I don't know, was there ever any chatter about the Canucks not being interested in Toffoli? Because, like, all I had heard is that the team was.
Yeah. It seemed to be right down to the wire when we heard that the Canucks were not going to be the dance partner. I didn't hear anything else before that where... Whereas we were hearing maybe in the day or so before the deadline that the Guentzel trade was getting, the price was getting too high. Yeah, so, and obviously he fits. Like, he's played with some of these star players already. Like, he fits.
I think he would have been a fine addition to Petey's line.
Yeah. Anyway.
But, you know, it is what it is. The Vancouver Canucks made no moves. Including Phil Kessel. Fizzle. It fizzled out. I was trying to do like a
play on words. I was just like, NHL player is called Noel somebody. Anyway. Yeah,
Phil Kessel fizzled out.
Good.
But I tried to wrap that all into one word. What was interesting is I want to say that the report was like a day or two before that the Kessel deal is going to happen. PJ, friend of the show, Patrick Johnson, he had actually shared that it sounds like Kessel is like plan C. Okay. That sort of lines up. You have other things, and this, if it, you know, A and B don't work out, you turn to C. I actually have no issue with this. But then during the sort of post-deadline mm-hmm. press conference, Alvin had talked about how they had decided that Kessel wasn't a fit for a few things. One of them was, you know, contract, it couldn't work that out. But he had made a comment along the lines of, not the way we want to play.
Yeah, and it was like, as it was one in a long list, but it was so stood out as like, oh, that's the real reason. Like, they could have, like done some shuffling to make a league minimum salary work. For sure they could. They clearly didn't want to. There were many things,
but not the way we want to play. And, I mean, who knows? Maybe it was after, you know, the tryout, they had determined that he wasn't in the condition that they would need him to be in to integrate with into the lineup or to be involved. I mean, who knows? Maybe it was just, you know, didn't really work out the way they had thought it would. We'll never truly know, but that was like the backup.
Yeah.
Like if nothing were to happen, Kessel would happen. And you could say that the Vancouver Canucks, they made what they could make work. Now, if we think back to the season, there were a couple of acquisitions that the Vancouver Canucks made earlier on in both Lindholm and Zadorov. And, you know, Anders, I think, had mentioned, or it might have been Morgan in C4 Discord, that if those trades had happened on deadline day, I think you and I and probably most other people would be like, hey, those are good deals.
Yeah.
Now, if Lindholm's play had, you know, depreciated as it has here in Vancouver, the same way in Calgary, I don't know if we'd be as keen on the value as to which we paid. That's the thing, is that we, I think, have to also acknowledge that the Canucks made deals before the deadline and therefore should not be castigated because they did nothing now. Like I saw people like, oh, it's either an all-in season or it's not. And if you're not going to make things work, you're not all in. You know, outside of the Vancouver Canucks doing what Vegas is doing.
Yeah, which no one is doing, by the way. Does Vegas is a law unto themselves.
Vegas isn't the only team doing what they're doing. They're just the only team that's doing it so blatantly without any care.
Oh, yeah. And by the way, I just mean loading up. And, like, Vegas is an class above in loading up.
The mechanism is to which they're using to load up, other teams are.
Are we going to talk about this later, or do I need to sidebar now?
Sidebar.
Okay. So, like, it is... So, I just need to once again go off on like hockey media snobbery. Like, there is nothing wrong with what Vegas are doing according to the law, and like if your team is doing it, it's fine. Like, I would wish more teams would be like that and be like, make use of the cap, make the best use of the cap, but it doesn't mean it does you can like it. Like, it's just absolutely fine to be a sports fan and go, it sucks. Like, I hate that Vegas is doing this. That's a valid response. It doesn't mean you don't understand the law or, like, the rules of the cap. It's just, like, annoying because it's an annoying team doing it. It's like, Vegas rub everyone up the wrong way, and I agree that's what's great about them if you're a Vegas fan. But it's also valid as a sports fan to be being like, yeah, it's just Vegas being crass, being blatant. That's a valid response. I just think it's like, we need to stop judging sports fans for being passionate about it.
Well, if you're unsure, like if you're a listener, you're like, well, what is it that Vegas is doing? What is it you're talking about? So the Golden Knights have pulled off a couple of deals. The most egregious being the one in inquiring Thomas Hertl at deadline. Where a player is traded while hurt. Now, not just hurt, while on long-term injured reserve. Now, if a player is on long-term injured reserve, the team is then afforded cap relief for the duration that they're injured while the season is ongoing. But the moment the puck is picked up off the ice from the last game of the regular season, the cap considerations are out the window. There's no cap in the playoffs. And so what teams like Vegas are doing is they're hiding large contracts on LTIR and in bringing these critical players into the mix for the playoffs. Tampa Bay has been doing it for seasons now. And I mean, and to your point, that what is it that these teams are doing? Well, they're doing what is perfectly copacetic by the terms of the collective agreement that the league and the teams and the players agreed to. Now, the league has done this before where they're like, oh, no, that's against the spirit.
Yeah.
And, but like, I mean, I find the, this so
the
so
spirit
funny
doesn't that, exist, right? Like, that's like they talk about that all the time in cricket, and it's the dumbest thing ever. It's just like, no, like, well, if it's not
the
against
the league is led by a lawyer.
Yeah.
Like, it blows my
it's
mind.
It's full of lawyers. Like,
that they would use that argument. And I mean, I'm not a lawyer, so maybe it's perfectly fine to go in front of a judge to say, but the spirit is what's been violated.
Yeah, like Harry Kane and Spurs trying to be like, we had a gentleman's agreement. Not a real thing. I mean,
moreover, the league has, in very few cases, retroactively punished teams for quote
very
unquote breaking
few
the spirit.
Cases.
Well, there's two. Most Canucks fans will say there's one. There are actually two. The Kovalchuk contract and Luongo's contract. And in both of these situations, the teams did everything that was by the letter of the law. Yeah, it might be against the spirit, and they found a loophole. But if you're going to retroactively punish one, you have to retroactively punish them all, and they didn't. And in this particular case, I said it in C4 Discord, I kind of wish the Vancouver Canucks could do what Vegas and what Tampa are doing. Hey, Tyler, I think you've taken a downward turn on your recovery.
Yeah.
Let's make sure you're ready for the playoffs.
Yeah, and let's be honest, like, there does have to be doctors signing off on this. But, like, you can't fake an injury. But, like, with what we know about hockey players, like, half the time, especially, like, big, tall defensemen like Tyler Myers, they're not playing 100% most of the time anyway.
Hockey players play with broken legs.
Yeah. So,
not that we're condoning that whatsoever. No, like, Hurdle's hurt. Like, he is hurt. Mm-hmm. But the fact that the Golden Knights can acquire him and the means that they have, knowing, like, here's the date he's going to be back, that's the part that I think irritates. And that's where I kind of wonder if the league, if they were to go and close this loophole, simply says the cap doesn't stop on, but maybe have some form of language that allows for you to expand what can be used come playoffs. Like in the off season, your cap hit can only be, I think it's like 10% above. So what should that rule not maybe play into it? I don't know if it solves it or changes anything, but I think there are ways to mitigate if this is truly a bad thing.
Sure. But like clearly, as of right now, there's no appetite from the league to do it. Maybe there will be next year. But yeah, I think things like the like NHLPA, at least the more revitalized version we have seen recently, I don't think they're going to agree to something when they literally don't get paid in the playoffs. Like, they get bonuses, but they do not.
Oh, yeah. No.
So, like, something will have to shift in order to close this loophole. I don't know whether it will or not. My point of view is just, it's fine for Vegas to do it. It's fine for people to be annoyed by it. Like,
what did the union do or the PA do when the league went after the Canucks over the Luongo deal?
I'm guessing.
I don't recall the PA didn't do anything. And see, there's part of me that wonders, does the PA view that as, well, that's between the team and the league and it doesn't impact the player? But like, for me,
and also
if I'm
the NHL
in the PA,
PA did very little in that time.
Yeah, but that's depressing player salaries, right? There's, to me, that's a problem. You can't depress opportunity between an agreement, you know. So anyhow, I mean, again, I'm not that smart. So if you're smarter than me, maybe you can look into that and tell me where my errors and my ways are. There's probably plenty.
There's a way to do it. We'll have to see if the NHL want to do that.
Yeah. But that leaves the Vancouver Canucks with the roster as it is. If you were banking on things turning around, the hope is that Lindholm finds the form that he had the first two games in a Vancouver Canucks uniform.
And he did look good this week.
He did.
Comparatively.
But, you know, and, you know, it was brought up actually, you know, it's a guy who's playing in a contract year. Like, players tend to elevate their game so that next deal that they sign is richer than the one they're currently on. Mikheyev needs to hopefully elevate his game. Like,
something needs Mikheyev to happen.
Post-injury is not the same Mikheyev pre-injury.
Yeah. And he's just not even, like, doing the little things. We're, like, you know how we joke about Louis Erickson, but, like, yeah, like Mikheyev, when you're off your game, finish your check, skate hard. Like, there's just a few things he could be doing while he's out of form, I think. Although it's a lot of a mental game when you get to that point, I think.
I saw someone comment on Threads that it's like Mikheyev's not even playing the same game he was playing when hurt last season.
Oh,
before
they
shut him down.
I'll take Mikheyev with a broken knee over this Mikheyev. Not actually.
But that's the strange thing was that you would think that you would at minimum get what you had before surgery, because for all intents, he was playing for the Canucks and was shut down because, I guess the season's washed. And I remember when we learned this, we were like, he was doing what?
Yeah.
Like, they should have shut him down much longer ago because that season was washed well before this. But, you know, the Canucks still have Pod Colson with the big team. They papered him down to Abbotsford for a night just to ensure, I believe, he's eligible for the Calder Cup playoffs. Mm-hmm. He, as you know, people were joking, showcasing himself very well in the few games that he had an opportunity to showcase and in.
Who knows? That could have easily been a conversation, right? Like, Lindholm was on the table, so I'm sure Paul Colson was. It just didn't work out. Like, they wanted to see him either way, right? But it was also...
But I think him staying up, having been papered down, you know, yes, there's injuries and the Canucks do need some depth, but that is a good sign. Mm-hmm. That is an opportunity that maybe the player had taken advantage of and is making it hard for management to say, actually, we don't need you up here after all. But, you know, I don't know what much more the Canucks have available down on the farm that they can bring up to.
I know. Was it Patrick Ovechkin that brought up Jet Wu? Like, and it was just like, yeah, you didn't even play him. Like,
well, but he got some really good experience watching from the press box.
And like, honestly, Jet Wu has a lot of promise. Like, he's not the kind of player you want to just throw into the NHL playoffs and, like, hope to make a difference. Like, as strong as Juleson has been. But Juleson has been strong because he's been here the whole time.
Was it Bourdon that got, like, his first NHL hockey was, like, essentially playoff hockey? Was it?
I mean, Chris Tanev, no?
Was it Tanev?
Also,
maybe it was Tanev. Like, I just remember there was someone who got called up because of injury, and their real first NHL hockey was essentially playoff hockey, and they did so well in the playoffs. I mean, another name that comes to mind is Stetcher, but I think Stetcher was, he played himself into the team during preseason.
Troy Stetcher once again on the move.
I mean, there was a player that the Vancouver Canucks could have maybe found a way to make magic. And though, in fairness to Troy from Richmond, that would have been a great depth signing, but at the end of the day, that's not the issue. Well, it is, but not, they have a lot of Troy from Richmond quality players, just not Troy from Richmond.
Yeah.
No one's
as fun as it would have been, like, for him to come back. It was just, it did make the whole deadline just, like, symbolic in that Canucks once again missed out on Tanev, Toffoli, and Stetcher.
Yeah. The Tanev price, though, was not a price that the Vancouver Canucks could afford to pay.
Once again, too rich for the Canucks.
Troy from Richmond, Tyler Toffoli, like those are, you know, deals where you're like, you sure that wasn't possible? There are other handful of sort of depth deals that I think happen where you could think that the Vancouver Canucks could have found a way to make work. But they stood pat. So if you don't like the roster they currently have, pound salt, because it's the roster we're getting until the offseason, at least. If you were keeping track of former Vancouver Canucks on the move, Beauvillier was traded for a fifth-round pick.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like a perfectly nice guy. He wasn't a fit here. Chicago in meltdown, so who cares? Like, they weren't necessarily wanting to hang on to players, but yeah. I do really hope he gets a good shot somewhere, because I think he is, like, one, a nice guy, but two, a lot of fun as a player. He just didn't ever fit in consistently here. I should say that Tanev did not make his debut in the playoffs. He played in January. He just didn't play for very long before he got injured and went back down
to Manitoba. It could be Tanev that I'm remembering. I just, whomever it was, they played some serious playoff hockey, but prior to that had may have had a taste, if anything at all. So it might have been Tanev. It's just, I'm an old man. The memory is starting to go. Everything blends together. God, I'm looking at the Troy from Richmond to deal. Edmonton sent the Coyotes a fourth round pick in 2027 and got a seventh round pick for this year's draft, plus Troy from Richmond. It was a $1.1 million hit. Like, again, that's not 1.1 that the Canucks have room for. But,
yeah, it's funny, like, as I was looking at what picks the Canucks have that they could have maybe used in the Toffoli deal, because obviously they gave away their first round pick in the Lindholm deal, but they do still have their first round pick next year. But I was scrolling down, and then you just start seeing, like, oh yeah, they have all their picks. Then I forgot that they gave away that 2026 seventh round pick to get Kratzoff. Okay. It's just so random. It's like, what are you going to do with that? Like, what is New York going to do with that pick? It's going to get packaged up and sent elsewhere, probably.
Yeah. You know, but looking at the deadline as a whole, which team won the deadline?
I mean, Vegas.
Golden Knights, yeah. I mean, but the thing about Vegas, they won the deadline, but if they don't make the playoffs, oh, did they lose the deadline? Then they lost it bad. Like, they have loaded up.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Like, you've got to think that the Jets did decently as well in that. They got Toffoli and then Colin Miller, who's a bit aged now, but like a solid sort of depth defenseman. So I'd be happy with like Winnipeg, and then Carolina got Jake Guentzel. Who else did they get? Kuznetsov, right? And yeah, didn't give up much to it.
So. Carolina gave a whole lot of, you know, various pieces of hockey gear and hockey tape to get Guentzel. Like,
and Michael Bunting, who it seems like Pedersen didn't want to live in Carolina. Maybe that's unfair, but he wasn't fitting in. So
I think Sam had tweeted out something about the deal. Like, you look at like what the Penguins acquired, and you seriously wonder how could Vancouver not make something like this work. To me, it's purely cap, really. I mean, yeah, the price was high because it also included picks, but like the picks have like 400 different conditions on them. So, for instance, the 2024 second round pick that went to the Penguins, that upgrades to a 2024 first round if the Hurricanes make it to the Stanley Cup final. I mean, I think it's fair to say that, yeah, there is a chance. Mm-hmm. The likelihood is that that's going to stay a second, so it's not going to become a first. And then on the 2024 fifth round pick, if Carolina wins the cup, then that pick goes back to that pick stays with Pittsburgh if Carolina wins. But
otherwise, like,
the pick goes back to – yeah, like – so Carolina, you know, by winning the cup, actually
– yeah, I think they're okay with that price to pay, but yeah, it is funny.
You know, because that's the thing, is that first round pick is essentially a second round pick when you win the cup, because yeah, you're the last team to pick. So actually, yeah, it would be, because I was going to say it's their, if it upgrades to first, would it be their first round? But yeah, it is their first round, because it was a second round Philly pick that they sent. Oh, anyhow, the deal. Weird.
Yeah, it's funny. It is, yeah, it's a strange one. There's a few deals that make you scratch your head a little bit.
Hey, Malcolm Saban, he's been traded for future consideration.
I know, I saw that. I was just like, oh, he's still playing. That's nice. Mm-hmm. I'm glad. Like, former Canuck.
Yeah. But, you know, speaking of future conditions, in years past, you see a bunch of deals where it's future considerations, and you're like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, so.
Futures.
Yeah, bag of pucks. I did, this is so off the rails, but I did see a story the other day that resurfaced about, like, a deal in lower league football in the 80s where a player was signed for a bag of 20 tracksuits.
Hmm.
That went back. Yeah.
Well, actually, now, on that note, like, if you've watched Moneyball, there's mm-hmm. And I don't, like, again, Moneyball was a liberal interpretation as to what Billy Bean and the Oakland A's were up to. But there was a deal that gets made in the movie where it's, I want this player and that player for money. Oh, and you have to put soda into my vending machine for 2 years or something like that. And then the response on the phone is like, are you serious? He's like, yeah, I want you to make sure my players have soda to drink. And they're like, okay. Like,
that's, I mean, a good mind game, though, because it's like, okay, you're well,
Oakland's notoriously cheap.
Us. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. But that again, if that were to have occurred, and the fact remains that it's believable that it could have.
Yeah.
I mean, the NHL used to have some crazy things going on in the old days. Like, I mean, even contracts. Like, Wayne Gretzky, his first contract in the NHL was not held by the Edmonton Oilers. It was held by Peter Pocklington. Wayne Gretzky signed a personal services contract.
Oh, my God. Wow.
And so his personal service was that he played for Peter Pocklington's hockey team, the owner. But also, if Peter Pocklington wanted him to go and market a used car for him, Wayne's contract required it of him.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. So. Anyhow.
Yeah.
Anna, like we said. The puck's about to drop.
No, I was just going to say the NHLPA, like, it is definitely in a better place right now.
Yeah, totally. Puck's about to drop in the Jets-Canucks game. You said that there's going to be a Canucks dub. I said it's going to be a Canucks L. We won't know what the result will be until we watch it and get back together in a week's time to re-record. But what final words of wisdom do you have for all of our listeners this week?
I don't, like, have anything apart from the completely random fact that I came across whilst looking up Chris Tanev, is that he was the first person from his school, the Rochester Institute of Technology, to ever play in the NHL. So good for him. School pride. That's all I have.
Does RIT have a hockey team? Because,
well, I guess
I did not know this.
I guess so. They must have done.
I mean, it would. I'm kind of intrigued that the Institute of Technology would have a hockey team.
Yeah, but I think some of those, like, I mean, BCIT would be like the nerds hockey team because it's all the broadcasters, the people that couldn't make it in the NHL.
Well, okay, in fairness, BCIT is more than just broadcast.
I know.
The campus in Richmond is aerodynamic. Like, I mean, it's you called them nerds, but the point is really smart, you know, aeronautical people. I was going to say engineers. I don't know if they get an engineering degree at a BCIT, but whatever. There's no hockey rink in Richmond, and I don't think there's one in Burnaby either. Maybe they play at 8 rinks.
Maybe.
Yeah. For me, if you're listening to this episode and you failed to go and realize that daylight savings has kicked in, so sorry to inform you that you lost an hour. Most of your clocks will have automatically updated, except for the microwave and the coffee maker, which, in fairness, many of you may wonder why the clock blinks. It's because you can set it. If you've reached this point of the show, though, as always, we would be more than happy if you were to support us. And there are many ways that you can do it. One of the easiest ways is to go to support.c4podcast.com, where you can financially throw a few bucks our way. That will forward you off to Buy Me a Coffee, or as Anna and I like to call it,
Buy Me a Pint.
And you can drop a couple of bucks as a one-off, or you could subscribe either on a monthly or annual basis. And that allows for us to pay for, well, essentially recording the show, hosting all that jazz. It ensures that we're committed to making this happen because you've paid for it to take place. It's a lot easier for us to pod fade and turn things off if ultimately the costs continue to go up. But I also appreciate not everyone's in a position to throw money our way. And to that effect, if you just take part in the conversation in C4 Discord, discord.io/C4podcast, you help engage and promote our content through social media. We're on Twitter at the C4 Podcast and on Threads at the Real C4 Podcast. Or even if you just go tell your friends or family, mom or dad, hey, there's a Canucks podcast. Or that's drop on Reddit and say it's an even-keeled podcast. We appreciate all of the recognition that you can provide. And hey, you know what? Having a fun ride, it's completely understood. There's 1,000 Canucks podcasts out there, but there's only one that's best mediocre and longest running, and that is us. So on behalf of Anna, A4603, and myself, Chris, at Lightforce, I'm going to sign off this episode with those words you've been waiting for. We out.